Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me this hour via phone, I welcome Joe Karfmacher. He has been advising families for the last 9 years through the college process. Whether it was his leadership at Xavier High School in New York as a director of the college counseling program, his tenure as a guidance and college counselor at St. Peter's Prep, or his own private college counseling firm, JDK College Counseling. Joe shares his expertise and advice with 411 Teen this hour. Joe, welcome to 411 Teen.
Happy New Year. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, as you heard me saying, I mean, planning for college can be one of the most exciting times in one's life, and also one of the most stressful times in the parent's life and the student's life. The admission process, as you know, is really arduous, and it can be even worse than that. How did you get into college application process? What did you learn from your own experiences?
Yeah, it seems like a long time away at this point, but I graduated high school in 2004, and it was actually a pretty simple process for me. I always laughed that I got into this field because I was not a great example of how to, you know, really own the college process. I liked the college that my older sister went to. She went to St. Joe's University in Philadelphia, which is, a medium-sized private school, about 2 hours from my home. She was six years older than me, and I visited her a bunch, and I really liked it. And I said, when I get to my senior year, I'm going to apply early there. And I applied in the fall of my senior year. I was accepted a few months later, and that was it.
It was very, very, very smooth for you, it sounds like.
I'm not, you know, the best example. The students that I see today across, you know, really the world who are applying to college, it's not as smooth or as stress-free as that. But, as college counselors, we do try to make that a little easier for them. But, yeah, it's tough process.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the program because you can share, you know, this is the time where they start. They start in the spring and they go through through the summer. And usually by the fall, they're definitely applying. So, you know, this is the time when they can benefit. Families and students can benefit from what you have to share. So let's look a little bit at getting into college. As you acknowledge, it can be now a very confusing and exhilarating and exhausting and arduous task. On the average, when do students formally start the process? Can you share with us, for the listening audience, we're going to take them step by step as to what they need to do. When would they start the process?
Yeah, so it's great to just kind of look at what the process would look like and start just having conversations, you know, with your parents or your counselor towards the end of your sophomore year, but really more of just like kind of have a talk to what the next 2 years look like. And that, you know, we don't want to put too much pressure, you know, that early on, but it's good to kind of see about, you know, testing, you know, if it makes sense to take the SAT or ACT junior year in the fall or spring. What are some colleges out there that you've heard of? Just have kind of casual dinner time conversations. Really formally, you know, the process in most schools will begin the second semester of junior year. That process begins with, you know, kind of identifying, you know, what that student, you know, wants in a college, you know, what, you know, that best fit, you know, for that individual student looks like. And then, you know, with, you know, their own kind of research and help with the counselor and parents, you know, maybe some family members that have gone through the process to, you know, search for colleges out there that meet what they're looking for. And, you know, that's a great time to start, you know, January, February, junior year.
Junior year, okay.
Begin the research. using online resources, the resources at the schools or whoever a student may use to help them guide them through the process. And then, during this is also, you usually see March, April, May of junior year. That's when the students are taking, their first, second, maybe third ACT or SAT.
Okay. Let me slow you down. You've got it. But how and when and what are the considerations that students should make when even we talk about college, there are alternatives? So I guess I'm asking you, do they have to? They don't have to know at that point, but just have an idea, right, that they might want to go to college. If that's the case, how do they go about the selection of a college? I mean, should it be a community college? Should they consider a gap year? Just how do they handle that year after high school graduation, that summer? What should they do? Should they go on and go to college? Or, I just want really basics in helping them to decide. If they're going to college, how do they decide where? So what suggestions would you offer? What kinds of variables would they consider in their college selection?
And that's a great question. And, when you talk about the college process and you hear about, how much hype goes into it and, everything in the news, it's all always focused on those, four-year colleges. But you're so right. There are so many other options to consider, whether it's, community college, if the student just, is kind of set on getting associates and then entering the workforce, or if they want to use that as a a jumping off point to go to transfer into a four-year college, which is great, or if they just want to go straight to a trade school, which, I have that conversation with families, there's so many jobs out there, whether it's, in construction or plumbing or, electrician.
Right, exactly.
Where, students can make, great money, have great careers, without, spending, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their degree. So that is 100% an option. Mm-hmm. So you want to have that conversation early on. And I always say, as a sophomore, junior, or even, the beginning of senior year, you don't need to make that decision.
Okay.
So I like to, kind of have the students relax a little bit, take a breath. Like, here are the options. There are four-year schools in your state. There are four-year schools, in other states or in the world. There are two-year community colleges, and there's, trade school, or a gap year, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Kind of four main options you're going to see when you're working as a student and what they should be thinking about. Mm-hmm. And again, junior year is a time for exploration, have them look, if I were to go to my local community college, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. If I were to take a gap year, what would I do? What would I do with that time?
Exactly.
Would I work? Would I travel? Would I do community service? And it's all about, the individual and what makes sense for them.
Right. And I think also, in addition, it might be, what do you want to accomplish in this year? Is this a year where you feel like you need to be amassing credits toward a degree, or do you feel like you have the leisure to take off, so to speak, and go into a gap year? One thing you didn't mention, and I wanted to ask you about, and I'm sure we've been talking so much about the process, is even the finances, because that should also dictate, where you go to. It maybe shouldn't, but the reality is it does dictate where you're going to attend school. You mentioned in-state and out-of-state, but that's determined, usually out-of-state tuition is significantly higher. So, I just want to know, do you think that is a variable they should choose, select, or be aware of, at least in their consideration, or should they just forget? And I've heard some counselors say, don't worry about the money. The money is out there. You can get the, but today we have students who are graduating in such great debt that I just wondered how you felt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tend to take an approach of seeing, the end, which is, traditionally May 1st of the senior year. That's when, the student decides where they're going. But they don't need to make the decision until the very end of April. So of their senior. So these students have a lot of time, and you know, I do tell them, of course, the finances, financial aspect of choosing a college should be a huge part of the discussion. It's really three areas when it comes down to, you know, making that final choice of where they're going to continue their education. It's, you know, academic fit of the school for them. Mm-hmm. It's personal fit. You know, will they be happy there? Will they thrive mm-hmm. there? And then the third piece, which is just as important, is the financial fit. Mm-hmm. And there, I think, a lot of families out there don't realize how, much money there is out there, and how many even private schools that, you know, that sticker price may be $60,000-$70,000 a year. They have lots of scholarship money, grants where they have to, they got to attract students to go there. But a family really won't know how much that private school especially is going to cost until the end of this whole process. That's when the spring of their senior year, they're sitting down hopefully with, a few options on their table, and they should have a conversation with their parents to see what's, again, the best fit academically, personally, but also financially.
Well, that's kind of a catch-22 because often the financial packages are due early. You know, they'll tell you to get them in early, yet you don't really make a decision or your final decision is not reached until, like you say, the end of April or May, which only gives you a few months to even get that in and to be considered. And I've heard, I don't know, that often by that time, much of the money that some of the smaller colleges have has already been allotted.
Right. Yeah, and you know what? Colleges, changed the process about 2 years ago with having families the ability to file their FAFSA, their main financial aid paperwork, much earlier, in the fall as opposed to January 1st. So as long as parents and students, follow, the timeline, they actually do have an answer of what, the college will cost, out of pocket, what that whole, what it looks like with a few months to really kind of think about it. You are right though that, some schools, a student may not hear though that they got in until April 1st. Yeah, that gives them all that month.
Hold your thoughts. We're going to take a brief break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me via phone is Joe Korfmacher. Joe tells us about the trials and tribulations of college admission, sort of like a roller coaster involving the emotional highs and lows that are felt throughout this whole process. Joe, what about the standardized test? So often, there's a meltdown among students, considering the standardized test and the madness that comes along with it. How do you recommend students and parents cope with the standardized test? And do you recommend that they, I have a couple of questions, I'll just throw them out there and you can answer. How do you recommend they cope with it? Do you recommend that they take the test multiple times? Should they take both of them, the ACT and the SAT? You know, just kind of give us an overview of where you sit, at least on standardized testing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a big, talking point, a big part of the college process, which definitely adds a lot of stress because, it's a number, right? It's something that students and parents can clearly see and unfortunately compare. It's what colleges use as part of the their process of deciding who they admit or not. It's a big part and a lot of anxiety around it. My advice with that is, there's many different ways to go about it, but I like to advise students to try to do a little prep work before. So most schools offer a PSAT or pre-ACT, which they take in their school and can, have, real, firsthand experience taking a test, and we'll get scores back to show where they're at. They are two different tests, and some students just do better on the ACT. Some students mm-hmm. do better on the SAT. Mm-hmm. And if they do a little work beforehand, and there's lots, you can take free tests online also, and just see what test kind of speaks to you more. And then my advice is to choose a test. Choose the SAT, choose the ACT, and prepare a timeline. So I'm going to take it in March and May, say. Okay. And then that's it. My advice is to never take it more than three times. Research does not indicate that your scores go up after a third time. And at that point you are, maybe wasting money, wasting your time, and, again, kind of drawing out the, anxious, part of this process. So pick a test early and then take it two to three times.
Do you recommend taking the private classes that are often mm-hmm. offered for standardized test? I mean, do you find that those are beneficial? They're expensive.
They are expensive, and it's obviously up to the family, and if they're able to, spend money on that to do. But if they're able to, I think they are helpful. It's a professional that knows the ins and outs of the test, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, both the ACT and SAT are tests that you can, really prepare for. And if the more prep work you put in, mm-hmm. the better chance you're going to get. And, is that fair? No. But, it is
what it is. I strongly agree with you there. I just wondered, that's one area where parents and students seem to kind of melt when it starts with this standardized testing. I mean, I think the price alone is, shocking. It's extremely expensive. So if you need to go to if you want to apply to several colleges, which I would think you would do, then there's a cost for each results being sent there. And all colleges, some colleges require SAT, some require ACT, and some of them have got to a point where they don't require anything at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And, one thing I would like to say is, you can obviously pay a lot of money for individual test prep, but the ACT and SAT both have free platforms on their website. The mm-hmm. ACT the ACT uses, it's called ACT Academy, and the SAT uses the Khan Academy system, and students can connect their previous, PSATs or pre-ACTs, our current SAT, ACTs, and actually do prep work online. And, it's very well designed and does help, but, that's for a student that, can kind of hold himself accountable and make sure that, he's doing his own work. Mm-hmm. But it is available, the free option.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because I think so often it seems like the prep courses are pushed, at least that's kind of the feeling that I get from students, and they cost a significant amount. So to hear you say, a college admission counselor say, that you can get adequate training if you're self-motivated and adequate preparation online, you can really do it. It's out there free, but it's not easy to do. Is that what I hear you say?
Yeah, they make it very easy to use. It's not easy for a lot of students just because it's that one extra step to actually do it.
Mm-hmm,
you know? But
mm-hmm.
if you're a motivated student, it's easy to use. It's all online. It connects to your previous test, and the resources are incredible. So it's there for you to take.
Okay, what do standardized tests tell us? Is there anything do the colleges really benefit from looking at the standardized test, given that many are eliminating it?
All right. Yeah. No, I mean, it tells you two things. It tells you how well you can take a 3-hour test. and the research will show you that it'll tell the school how a student will perform in that first year of college. But beyond that, it really, there's no correlation. Mm-hmm. And I think more and more colleges have, finally realized that, and are, you know, eliminating, you know, the obligation for students to send in scores, which is great. And the, there's a great resource called FairTest.org that, you know, all your listeners should check out. It has an up-to-date list of all the test optional colleges. So those are schools that don't require students to send in test scores for admission. And the list is huge, you know. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of colleges, and grows every year.
So, give us that website again.
It's FairTest, and it's FairTest.org. And yeah, when you go there, there's going to be a tab at the top that says, you know, optional list, and that's what they want, and it's an alphabetical order, easy to, if there are like 10 schools that students looking for, you can just, you know, search them and help them with their college planning.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Do you have any particular books that you would, or resources that you would recommend to parents in helping them guide their, you know, child, their student through this whole process? And I, you know, I don't know if you have any particular, but I was just thinking if you did, because parents, you know, this is also, I'm talking about the students, but it's a stressful time for the parents too. Often the parents are forgotten. All they're doing is writing checks, you know, you know, but it's a very difficult time for them. I think the parent perception may have been what created or at least influenced the this recent scam that was going on as far as college admissions were concerned, because it was the parents who were doing this. It wasn't the students themselves. The parents were doing it unbeknownst to some of the students, that they didn't know what was going on. So do you have any suggestions that you may offer to parents who are going through this admission to college?
Yeah, so a couple of resources and just another idea that, you know, is a very simple one that the parents don't use enough. So the free resource, not free, but resources that, you know, are very, you know, affordable. The FISC Guide is a book, and you know, you can download information online too. So the FISC Guide to Admissions is a really good one. And you can just get to colleges, and you can, you know, look up, you know, hundreds of different colleges and start seeing if they'd be a good fit for their kid. Niche also is a really great website, N-I-C-H-E.
Okay.
And really good, too. You can kind of compare where your student is academically, you know, to what the school's looking for. You can find out about majors, things like that. So those are two resources that parents should definitely use. And also, you know, I worked in the as a college counselor in the school system for 10 years before I moved, you know, to the private side. But there's so many of my families never, you know, emailed me or set up an appointment with me, and I was there, you know. And I think we see that across the board that, you know, parents often don't use the resources that are right there at their fingertips. And there obviously, you know, are many, many high schools where the caseloads are enormous, but there's still, the counselors are still there to, you know, help parents and students, you know, through the college process. I think at the very least, you know, parents can, you know, email or call their counselor to ask some questions or potentially set up a meeting, you know, to help guide them through this process.
Okay. Well, we've covered, I guess, the academics. What else are they looking for as far as students? Is there anything else that the colleges are looking at besides the standardized tests? What comprises their decision?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, academics, and test scores for many colleges, you know, are obviously important factors, but there's a lot more to it, which I think sometimes parents and students don't realize. They're just focused on those two metrics. But one is you know, passion and love of learning. You know, you know, so the college can see, hey, the student is challenging himself by taking maybe one or two APs the senior year, and he's doing it because, you know, he loves English and wants to, you know, take the most advanced English that, that high school offers, or that he created a book club so he can, you know, get others involved in reading more and talk about novels. Mm-hmm. You know, that shows college admission counselors that this student, you know, not only does well in school, but actually has a love for learning. When he comes to our school, he's going to continue that and do well. Mm-hmm. And involvement in their community, okay, you know, is very important. I think too often parents and students think that, you know, they have to, you know, cure cancer or climb a mountain to to be, you know, to stick out of the crowd. And that's not true. You know, college admission counselors, they don't want students to just go from school to home and work, mm-hmm, and that's it. You know, they want to see them involved. And it doesn't need to be 10 to 20 different things. It can be one, two, three different activities that that they've continued during high school and that they've shown improvement, they've shown leadership, and, you know, really a dedication to that, whether it's a sport or a club or a job. And, you know, that really is important to admissions counselors.
Yeah, and so I guess often I was going to say to you, often I hear from college counselors that often the parents are focused on the wrong things, and I think you identified that because those two major wrong things would be the academics and the test scores. You're not belittling them. Yes, they are significant, but there are other components, other variables that the admission office takes into consideration. Do they take into consideration that student who may have made, well, may have had really very traumatic trials and tribulations and has overcome that? Mm-hmm. May not be that A student, but maybe they're a solid B student and they worked all through college. I mean, all through high school. Nonetheless, they're going to have to work through college. Is that something that is considered, just kind of the social, economic, and cultural background? Does that influence admissions at all?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, you really see it, you know, a lot in college admissions board. Maybe that B student, you know, gets into a super selective school that is turning down, you know, tons of students, mm-hmm, you know, straight A's and high test scores, because they've overcome a lot and they've already shown maturity and, you know, the ability to handle a lot. There's, you know, there's so many students out there that, you know, life is pretty easy, you know, for them, and they can just focus on doing well in school and, you know, preparing for tests, and they kind of coast there. And it's no fault to them. It's just, you know, their life. But there, you know, are so many other young men and women out there that, you know, aren't that lucky and have at a very young age have to grow up and, you know, work two jobs, self-support the family, or take care of a sick family member. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's time that takes them away from, you know, their academics. And if they, you know, have some B's and C's on a transcript but have shown these other ways that they've really kind of dominated, you know, life, that's really important to admission counselors and definitely can help.
How important is it that they visit the college, that they become familiar with the college? And I ask you that because I know you said that there were three basics that one considered in admission. Academics was one, but that personal, that connection. I mean, do the people on this campus feel like you would want to interact with them? Are they accepting, or do you feel like an outlier? Just how important is that, the visit?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of twofold. One, I think it, you know, for a student to get on campus and just see themselves there, mm-hmm, and see what, you know, the students are doing, what the students look like, what the culture is like, and the layout of the community, the campus, the physical plant, I think it's extremely important for a student to do that, just to help decide if that's the right college for them.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, it's not always possible. Yeah,
right.
Depending on where the college is, if it's further away, it just whether it's time or money or other resources, students often cannot get there. So I do think it's important if a student is able to visit any of the schools on their list, they should do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if a college is close, close meaning, maybe an hour or so drive, I think a lot of colleges, in many ways expect that student, if mm-hmm. they're serious about applying there, to visit, that they're not just throwing out an application and applying, but they actually do care about that school. But colleges absolutely realize that, many students can't visit because they're too far away. And they don't hold that against them in the admissions process. And there are, ways, whether it's on the website or different resources where students can kind of do a virtual tour.
Do you think those are effective? I mean, from those that you have seen, do you think they give an accurate representation of the college? What can students gain by a virtual tour?
Yeah, I think it's not ideal. It's not like the real thing, but it's definitely better than nothing and better than just pictures on their website. I think that they can at least gain just an image of what the school looks like, and if they could begin to start picturing themselves there or not. It's absolutely not the same as getting on campus, but it's really the next best thing, right?
So. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I have been talking with Joe Karfmacher. Joe, I just want to say thank you. I mean, for sharing your expertise. I think the information that you have shared to this point has just been really beneficial, and it's just been real basic. And I think that often we don't give just basic information. So, again, I want to say thank you for sharing your expertise with us. I mean, just things like visiting, like we were just talking about. How important is it? Is it really something that they need to try to do? Okay. But let us continue. This is the last section, and I want to get all the information I can from you because I'm sure it will be very, very helpful. So, again, how do we avoid or address this stressful situation? Students are stressed out during this time. I mean, most of them. Sure, there may be a few that are gliding through, but do you have any suggestions of what parents can do to make it easier during this time? This tumultuous, difficult time. Is there anything that a parent can do or cannot do or stop doing or whatever? And I think of stopping because I know nagging. I hear that so much. My mom is on my case. So that's what.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I always tell my parents, especially when they're in the thick of it. So say end of junior year, fall, senior year, when they're applying, pick a time each week. Whether you say it's every night at dinner time for 20 minutes, or 3 times a week. Before bed, whatever you want to call it, to have your college discussions. But, keep mm-hmm. it, within those guidelines. I think too often the college conversation kind of carries over and dominates, all conversations, morning, afternoon when I get home from school, mm-hmm. and at nighttime. And that, constant attention to it adds to the stress. So pick a few times throughout each week to discuss it, talk about updates, thoughts, feelings, and then, leave that and move on to other topics. Because, college, you can get exhausted talking about it too much, and it starts earlier and earlier, it seems. With that, I also say, really don't start, planning, what college you want to apply to, or what you want to write your essay about until that junior year. Mm-hmm. Freshman, sophomore year of high school should be a time for a student to thrive and love being a high school student, not already thinking about, the next steps. It's usually good advice to not even start talking about college until halfway through high school. That's one, for sure. And the other, though, would be, I think, parents need to allow, students to own this process. It happens at a pretty interesting point in their life when they're, 16, 17, 18 years old, and, they're, turning from adolescence to young adults, and, they really need that control of their life. And I think too often parents, for many different reasons, want to control this process. And then that results in sometimes some verbal arguments, students shutting down, nothing good. So they do need to let the students own this process, but obviously, the parents should be a part of it, have a couple of times each week to talk about it, but let the student own it. And usually when that happens, and as long as they have some guidance along the way, it turns out to be a better experience for everyone involved.
Okay. All right. Often I've heard that colleges really do not admit students. They admit applications. Would you agree with this? Saying that your application really is you in this process, It represents you. Where do you sit on this?
It depends. I think, bigger state schools, that have, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 applicants, mm-hmm. They don't have the time for the most part to really get to know the students. So, a lot of times it's just based on grades and numbers, mm-hmm. test scores, and maybe a few other metrics. So they are kind of accepting the applicant or the application. But I would say for most schools that, that are out there, the smaller, medium schools, as long as they have a good admissions team, they really are trying to know that student. They're trying to know them in context of the school that they go to, the high school they go to, and really trying to understand their personality and if they will fit within their own community. Because people often forget these are admission counselors. They're people that work in their specific college community, and they are pretty much deciding what people they are bringing into their community. So they want to make sure that they have people that are going to fit and contribute and be positive influences mm-hmm. in their campus life.
Do you have any suggestions or techniques to help students identify their unique talents and then communicate them in an application? I mean, can it be on the essay? But often students are, what do I say? I don't know what to, So I'm just wondering, do you have any suggestions on how they identify a unique talent? I don't do anything, I mean.
I think this is always a great time to work with, your counselor, because it's especially essay and kind of when you're talking about yourself, it's really hard for adolescents to do this, mm-hmm. to kind of have that self-reflection and in many ways brag about themselves. They're not comfortable doing that. It's always great to talk to a professional, someone that's in this field and do brainstorming and just kind of find out, talk about what you're involved in, what you like. And I have so many conversations with students where they say exactly that. Like, I don't do anything special. But then after we, talk about 30 minutes, I have like a list of all these amazing things that they've done. They just not, it's not on their forefront to say that. So I think, kind of hidden sauce there, just having a conversation with, a counselor to kind of examine your life, what you're involved in, and pick one or two things. When you're talking about the essay specifically to discuss.
Okay. say a few words about not needing, I'm not telling you what to say, but I know what you're going to say, to some degree, not needing to know what a major is when you walk on the campus. Yeah. You know, so often students are forced with, what am I going to major with? And you know, they change majors so often. And there's a base core of classes that are required, prerequisites, that everyone is going to need to take. So they really don't need. But would you talk about that?
Absolutely.
Needing to know a major.
That's one of my favorite conversations when I have students. I'll ask them, you know, can you tell me the number one major for students as they're entering college? You know, they'll say business or, you know, accounting or psychology. Those are all fine answers, but the real answer is undecided. So I think it's about 60% of students entering their freshman year of college are undecided majors. Mm-hmm. So they're going to take a year and a half to take a bunch of different courses and decide, you know, what path they want to pursue. And I think once you tell students that, they take a breath because, you know, that's one thing they don't need to decide right now. And that's kind of what college is about, right? To figure out what you're good at, what you like, what you want to pursue your career in. So absolutely, I love students that are undecided, and you know, there are many students out there that know they want to be an engineer, and they know they want to go into radio like yourself, and that's great, but most don't. Most think they do, but you know, kind of quickly realize that they don't, and that's fine. So undecided is a great path to start off with.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because I've had encountered several students who just feel stressed because, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, they may be panelists on the program here. And often I'll introduce them and they'll, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he's just undecided. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's pretty cool to me. You know, that way you'll get a little taste of everything. That's what college is about.
That's right.
So if you don't know, that's okay. Any other insights that you would share about this feared essay? The essay, I got a laugh out of it, but the essay seems to elicit, you know, sheer fear and pain and duress when students encounter it. Anything you would say about that?
I think it's important to follow the timeline here and not even think about the essay until the end of, you know, junior year. And you know, don't try to do it now, but also don't try to do it right before a deadline. You know, a good time to work on the personal statement is, you know, really June through August, because you're done with school. You can you're not worrying about your classes.
Right.
You can focus a little bit of time on that. But when it comes down to writing it, it's really truly about the student being honest, picking one or two topics that they want to explore really, and write it out. It does not need to be an incredible story. Again, where they're, you know, crossing an ocean or climbing a mountain by themselves. It doesn't need to be that, but it's the one chance for most college admission counselors to get a little insight onto who this applicant is beyond the numbers and everything that they're involved in. So it is important for students to take it seriously, but it's not the make or break, you know, for colleges. It's a supplement. It's a piece of it. It adds to their application, but it's not everything. So that's important for students to know that they should, you know, spend some time with it and be proud of what they present. As long as they're proud of it, it showcases who they are and it's well written, then that's all that really matters. And I would say definitely just, you know, work on it and have it done in the summer. So the fall, you're not, you know, worrying about it. And you can have one or two people, maybe an English teacher, look it over, make sure the grammar is all set, and you know, be done with it.
Yeah. So you're saying get it done in the summer and then just fine tune it if you have to during, you know, that fall, I guess it would be, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. So that's good. In these last few minutes, I have a couple other things that I think you could help them with. In fact, I know you could. What about that student that is working? It seems like today so many more students are working and going to school than certainly they were in my day. I mean, I have encountered, it seems like students are working and have a lot of other responsibilities, okay?
Absolutely. Are you referring to working in high school or college?
I'm talking about the student who may have worked in high school, but they're going to be working in college.
Right.
And they know that they have to work, you know, for college. That can be a real difficulty.
Yeah, I think it comes down to time management,
okay.
You know, for sure. It's not easy, but you're right. Many students do that, and you know it helps them, you know, either pay down their loans that they're going to accrue, or mm-hmm. you know, just for some extra money in their pocket, or for other reasons. But you know, one thing I think many students don't realize, like in college, you actually do have a lot of free time. Like you may at the most be in class. You know, 15 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's doable. It's doable, but yeah, it takes, you know, some time management, some maturity, and, you know, trying to stick to, you know, 2 hours of studying this day, then I'm going to work for 4 hours, go to class for an hour, and, you know, it takes a schedule to stick to that, but it's doable.
Yeah, you just have to be organized.
Yeah, for sure.
In these last few minutes, what we haven't addressed has been, well, there are two things. How do you deal with the failures? You know, you get that rejection letter. That's the first one. So any suggestions on that? I mean, it is what it is. I recognize that. But often that rejection letter, you know, they feel like they take it personal. It's a rejection of them. And, you know, well, you know they do. So any suggestions you have on how to cope with it? What they can do, you know, because it's all about adapting and adjusting, you know, much of it is. And failure, we're not going to have mom and dad, that helicopter mom, or the snow plow parent around. Hopefully you don't, okay? And you're going to be on your own. So you're going to need to know how to handle the ups and the downs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have this discussion a lot, you know, with my students, you know, before they're applying. And I think it's important for them to realize, you know, they will get denied from college. And it's okay. And actually, you know, I run some courses where, it's, you know, the first day I'll have a group of 20 students. I make them all stand up, look at each other, and say at the same time, I will get denied from college, and it's okay. They laugh and, you know, say, but it's true. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It doesn't mean that you are a bad person. It doesn't mean you couldn't excel there. In fact, I'm sure you could go to, you know, that college and do great, but it's a numbers game. So it's nothing personal. So we want to address that early on so they're prepared. And second, and this is very hard to do, but I tell my students, you know, during the winter, spring months of their senior year when they're getting results, stay off social media because their friends will only post the colleges that they accepted on. You're not going to see someone on Instagram, you know, say, hey, I got rejected from this college. It doesn't happen. You know, you post, you know, the good stuff. And if you go on and say you got denied from your first college and it's another 2 months before you hear from the other schools and you're seeing all your friends got accepted to college, that's going to affect you. So try to stay away from that and just realize also that, you know, people will just be posting the good news, but everyone, you know, has some denials in there.
Any closing remarks in adapting? And it would need to be 45 seconds, because just adapting to the freedoms that they haven't had before. You know, so many students have problems just adapting to their newfound world that they really are in control.
They're free.
They're free.
They're free. Some people cannot handle that freedom and go kind of crazy the first week or two, but I think a couple things are important to establish a routine. So, you know, and the little things, you know, I'm going to eat breakfast here or this time, lunch at this time, dinner at this time, establish a routine, study time, all that, because if you don't, you can, you know, quickly get overwhelmed with the free time and do some things that aren't productive. And also, you know, find a group, whether it's, you know, a group of friends or maybe it's a club. You know, I played club rugby in college, and they were friends from the first week and allowed me people to hang out with, talk with, and, you know, kind of just that.
We're out of time.
Okay.
I again want to say thanks to you. I really appreciate all that you have shared. To my listening audience, thanks for the privilege of your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.